delegation from Tourism City and CTFL CETA for us attending late. Members, just to start by firstly, in absentia, congratulating Honorable Fansman, who was the chairperson of the portfolio committee, in his appointment into the executive as Deputy Minister for International Relations. He assumed his responsibilities immediately after being sworn in on Monday. You'd note that after the announcement by the President on Sunday, he was appointed Deputy Minister for International Relations. So he's no longer with us. He's no longer chairing. And we are hoping that before the end of the week, we would have chairpersons being appointed. I'm currently acting to assist the committee with the work, as we have been doing in the previous weeks. So we're just following and proceeding with our engagements with the annual reports. But first, I think it's important for me to reflect where I'm sitting. Maybe in my capacity as the whip of the committee, appreciation to Honorable Fransman in the leadership he showed to the committee and to the steady work that he has done in his absentia, and I think we'll find a way of sending our message to him, wishing him all the best in his new responsibilities. And we are definitely sure that he will do it his best ability and excel in that responsibility. So I thought I should open the meeting with that, noting the developments within our higher education sector. And as well, I think as the portfolio committee somehow would have will find a way of welcoming the Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Honorable Mkhize, who is not here with the minister, but I think the parliamentary liaison officer would pass our congratulations to the deputy minister and say that we are looking forward to a healthy working relationship and a fruitful one as she joins the Department of Higher Education or the Minister of Higher Education. So that's what I wanted to say on those two appointments that are there. Without wasting any time, I don't know if there's anyone who would like to say anything before I proceed to the presentation. Okay. Honorable Duko.
No, thanks, Chairperson. No, we just echo what you're saying. Our congratulations to our Chairperson. Former Chairperson, Honorable Fransman, and wish him the best in his new appointment, and also to welcome, as you say, our Deputy Minister. We echo what you're saying, madam.
Thank you very much, Honorable Diko. In that note, I think we'll proceed and start with our presentation. Firstly, we are going to have Tourism CETA. Maybe I did not introduce myself to the team. My name is Mamoloko Kubai. I'm the whip of the committee, Portfolio Committee of Higher Education, and acting chair for this week. And would request the team from Tourism CETA to introduce themselves, together with the team from CTFL CETA to introduce themselves. But I think I will allow the chairpersons of the board to lead, if there is a chairperson, or if not the chairperson, whoever is a member of the board, to lead the introduction as leaders of the delegation. Over to you.
Madam Chair. From CETA, My name is Mike Tetezi, and I hereby apologize on behalf of the chairperson who is going to be joining us in a few minutes, Mr. Mabaso. He was to do the introduction, to be there with me. He is not here. My name is Mike Tetezi, as I indicated. I'm accompanied by Mzi Mwanza, who is the Skills Development Manager, HQA manager, Mr. Ibrahim Bungat, and Mr. Tovela, who is our accountant. This is the team that is going to do the presentation today, Madam Chair, the chairperson will join us in a few seconds. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Oh, he's on the way, the chairperson. Okay. CTFL CETA, the chairperson can introduce and then.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Abeda Abrams. I'm the chairperson of CETA for CETA. We've got Peter Nacker, which is our CEO, Gina, which is our chief financial officer, and Ami, which is our marketing manager. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those introductions. And then I'll come back to the tourism CETA. I'm hoping by the time we engage in the report, the chairperson will be here, because normally the governance issues are asked to the board chairperson. I would request you to start. I know your presentation is long, would appeal that we don't necessarily go each and every client, because otherwise we might not be able to have enough time to engage. The annual reports were sent to us. We have looked at the annual reports. So I'll just appeal to you to highlight most important issues that we want us to look at. Thanks. And over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sure we were actually encouraged by the statement you've made that, look, the annual report was received, and I hope members have been able to familiarize themselves with the annual report. We're going to deal with the highlights of the report without having to deal with the details. The presentation, of course, was structured in such a way that, look, we explained the mandate of the CETA, the objectives, the strategic business objectives, the financial performance and the performance information, as well as significant highlights. On the mandate, I assume that, look, members are familiar with the mandate of the CETA and the general objectives of CETA are to facilitate, coordinate, and monitor the implementation of the NSTS, to identify skill shortages in the sector, to improve the employment prospects of persons previously disadvantaged by unfair discrimination, to promote the development of skills for self-employment, to promote effective and communication, to quality assure education and training. The strategic objective, business objectives are outlined here, to achieve and exceed the service level agreement targets that we normally sign with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and to retain effective administration to operate within the 10% or the 12.5 level income, and also to continue about average levels of service delivery to our stakeholders. On the financial performance, we have outlined the income and expenditure. We have indicated that there has been consistent increase in the levy, right, as well as there has been the valleys as well as the peaks for the expenditure, right. However, we're now maintaining those expenditures. I can also say that with confidence that, look, we had an unqualified report from the Auditor General, and our expenditure rate is maintained at 99%. Of course, cash on hand is very, very low, and the sector challenges remain a huge issue for us. Oh, my apologies. On the performance information, terms of the service level agreement, we have the Department of Higher Education for this previous year. In respect of indicator 1.1, we were able to submit to the department, right, our sector skills plan, right, as of the 31st of August 2009. Right. On indicator 1.2, right, which is information on critical and scarce skills, right, and we were able to achieve 113%, right, for the SDFs that we have been able to assist in that in the period under review, right. Our target was 634 and we achieved 715. In respect of the companies that we assist on the mandatory grant, right, we have agreed that with the department that will assist eight, right, those companies, right, who are deemed to be large companies, and at least eight of them. Right, we targeted 168 and we achieved 193, which translates to 115%. In respect of the medium companies, 2.1, we call it 2.1B, we targeted 168 and we achieved 193, which is 115%. On 2.2, right, 40% of the levy companies to be supported. We targeted 1,072. We only achieved 592, which is 56%. This is companies whom we assist them by paying back their mandatory grants. Right, and in this particular one, right, companies who we supported for paying back the mandatory grants were very few, right, and we are putting systems in place to up the numbers as far as possible. In respect of the indicator 2.5, where we assist the companies, right, we targeted 200 for those that need to be supported, and we assisted 452. Right, and same indicator which deals with the co-ops, right, we targeted 30 co-ops, and we were able to assist 50 co-ops in the sector. 2.7 is learners that are to enter and complete the adult basic education, right, level 4. Right, we entered 3,000. In fact, the target was 3,000, and we only managed to enter 492. Which was a 16%, and the completion rate was 1,270, right, and the performance there was 1,305. So we achieved 103%. Reason being that, right, we had learners that completed in the period under review. That's why the number of completion went up. Right. In respect of the indicator 2.8, which is learners that are employed, right, those who go through the learnership, right, and complete it. Those who entered, our target was 1,175, and those who entered, the natural effect was 683, which was 546%. I think we'll have to look at the figures here, but it seems not to be speaking properly. Completed the number, I think, in the annual report, I think it is reflected properly. Maybe to check that. Those who completed, right, we targeted 588, and we were able to complete 3,211. And reasons being that, look, in the previous year, we enrolled a significant number of learners, and that's why they are completing in the year under review. Indicator 3.2, which is non-levy paying enterprises, we targeted 95, and we were able to have 154, right, that we managed to have. Indicator 4.1, this is the opposite of 2.8, which is now learners that are unemployed, right, and we targeted 450, and our performance was 436 in terms of the enrollment. But completion, we targeted 225, and the completion was significantly high. It's 1,962, and reason being that in the previous year, we actually enrolled more learners, and they are now exiting the system in the period under 4.2 is learners in critical skills program cover. But we targeted 2,000, right, and we managed only to enroll 141, which is about 7%. And the same indicator talks about 70% of them needs to find a placement after completion, and we targeted 1,400, and we did not place anyone in those particular for employment purposes. FET, but those learners that are to be on the new venture creation 4.3, but our target was 161, and we did not roll any for the year, as well as 70% of them were to have employment, and we didn't have anyone on that. 5.1 deals with the institutions that are to be supported to the ISOEs, but our target was 3, but then we managed to have 7, which is 23%. 5.2, the companies that are training providers in our scope, that we would take the new venture creation as a business venture in terms of delivering that, but we committed to ourselves that we'll assist one training provider, but that would be duly accredited for the program of new venture creation, and we managed to have 2. But on the ETQA, which is 5.3, we achieved 5 out of 5 for the SAFA audit. So these are the performance, Mr. Chairman, that we have agreed with the Department of Higher Education, and they have came and be able to indicate to us in terms of the evaluations. Significant highlights that we prepared to share with the audit with the members of the committees we have met. In some instances, we have met our targets, and in some instances, we have exceeded. Of course, in some places, we have not been able to enroll learners. We have achieved an unqualified audit for the last 5 years, but, and it is also important to indicate that, look, our organization for the past 2 years, our focus has been on learnership, but, and this was geared to be able to have sufficient people skilled for the World Cup, like in those particular places, on the learnership, on professional cookery, those are who are doing the waitering. So we also had a significant enrollment on graduate development for the 2009. And in the year where we had the World Cup, right, which we had to train volunteers, right, and these volunteers were played a very pivotal role in the World Cup that we had. NSDS is in progress with consultations, of course, and proposed new landscaping, but it is one of the issues the minister will make announcement at appropriate time. Well, our view, Mr. Chairman, is with these targets that we have indicated here, right, the department comes and do evaluations in terms of our scores. And they were able to determine that, look, we got 4 out of 5, right, which is performance, which is above requirements. Well, on the issue of the landscaping, of course, I'm not going to say much, safe to say that, look, TITA is anxious to see this matter being behind our back. The minister is keen to deal with it, and we know what has been the public in the public domain since the issue came about. Of course, we appreciate that the portfolio committee has called us to be able to come here, and we take you as our stakeholder, and we thank you very much for this opportunity that you have given us. And it is through the efforts of the stakeholders and the staff that we're able to. On the financial review, ending 31st of March, and we need to say though, we were operating in a very difficult economic climate. We are probably aware that it is the time when the meltdown was actually with us. And the sector analysis, the investment, the audit report, the annual financial statement, these are the content of the few slides that are coming through. Of course, the interest rates averaged around 7%, which the plan to 10. The inflation rates bordered around 6 to 10%, mainly administration expenses that are affected here. Minimal exchange rates for the local operations. The business cycle, slow recovery from the recent recession. There are still those humps, but despite the fact that the economy has actually picked up, and so we have to live with those speed humps in terms of these issues. And we know what mitigation has been put in place for business that were actually having a stress in this particular case, where NSF came to the party in terms of saying people can apply. The sector which we are operating in, it is a fact that, it's still least transformed, and the salaries scales are very low. As a result, our revenue base is very low, despite that, there's a huge number of people, companies and people to be able to serve. Right. Companies that are in our scope in terms of our WSP, that is our systems, workplace skills plan, Department of Higher Education and Training Levy Info. Companies that are below 50, with 50 employees and below, they range in the region of about 20,000, and that's a significant number. And those that are large companies and medium companies constitute 1.3% and medium 2.6%, which is very low. Well, on investment, I think it's important to indicate to you that we do have investment policy, and investment policy requires us that we bank with the approved banks by the National Treasury, and funds are split amongst three banks. Those are approved by the National Treasury. The liquidity risk is monitored very closely, and we optimize interest and via investment strategy on a regular basis. We monitor those investments. The audit report, as I indicated, we had an unqualified report with a few emphasis of matter. The Auditor General will express an opinion on the performance information in this current financial year. Stakeholders should expect the AG to do audit at local sites, and currently only major project sites are being visited by both the internal auditors and the Auditor General. On the financial statement, we do have the audit report, but we also report that we have included the accounting authority report. We do have the statement of financial performance, statement of financial positions, as well as statement of change in net assets, cash flow, that are contained in the annual report. Just to bring members up to speed, in preparation of the annual financial statement, we do adherence to GRAP, and we have implemented all the nine new GRAP statements. Little, of course, it had on the AFS import and impact. We're guided by our accounting policies, and no change in our accounting policy for the year under review. The skills development levy, it remains as it is. There has not been change. Administration 20%, annual training record, and the WSPs is 50%. Discretionary grants remain at 20%. They're all 80%. On the statement of financial statement performance, we need to indicate that, look, the skills development levy income constituted 96% of our income. Penalties and interest income constituted 1% of our revenue. And the NSF constitutes 1% interest income, interest rate was about 1%, and other income was 1%, so they all come to 100%. Statement of assets, of course, they are outlined in our annual report where we deal with the assets required disposal, as well as depreciation and administration changes. Cash generated from the operating activities, it came to 1.158 million. Cash paid to stakeholders came to about 182 million, and investment income was what, 1.1 million. Right. Of course, for the 2009 and 10. Deficit was about 11%, right, and the liquidity was about 66%. On the reporting side, no new GRAP statements, right, for the current year is being contemplated. On the performance, AG is to express an opinion on performance information. The AG is to visit and conduct site visits, right? The AG is to participate in all the committee, specification evaluation bid committees. He has indicated that it is his wish, so that when we have those meetings that they be present to be able to see as to how we conduct our business. On the legislative side, SARS, of course, having changed the electronic submission of the EM2 impacted significantly, right, for this current financial year. The electronic climate, of course, is the decline of the internet transfers, the stability of the income, the inflation, and on the budget for the discretionary grants, we're budgeting 82 million. And a mandatory to spend 85% to 90% mandatory grant. That's the annual report presentation, Mr. Chairman. And we will invite questions. But I need to say, though, that Mr. Mabaso has now joined us as the chairperson of the board. And I'm sure he would wish to say a few words that he intended before we started the meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have other presentations, of course, and I've been told by the office that, look, for this you would prefer that, look, we're only confined to the annual report, and however, we're ready to deal with other issues that the committee may wish. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Chairperson. If I give you, may give you some few minutes to just make some remarks.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to apologize for the late coming. There is nothing in particular that I need to stress over and above what the CEO has said, and I missed some parts of it. But also to just stress on the point that we thank the Portfolio Committee for inviting us to share with you some of our achievements, and possibly invite as well guidance on some of the issues which you might think might be useful in taking our conversation forward. Other than that, I would also just await questions and assist in responding to questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Board. Maybe let me just start, honorable members, that we engage the presentation before us and the annual report. So when you raise issues, if you want to make reference, honorable members, just make sure that you either refer to the annual report or the presentation when you're talking about pages, so that it's easier and quicker for us to be able to reflect. Can I note hands to be able to engage with the report? Honorable Dikobo. Honorable Moshwan. Honorable, you're sitting a bit far. Honorable Van der Zeezen. Just to look at that, in that order, we're taking the reports. As CEO, we note the reports and we appreciate the presentation that is before. But let's just take the hands and then we'll interact with them. In that order, I've called them.
Thanks, Chairperson. Also, thank you to the teacher group for the presentation. I have quite a few questions. Maybe I must do the first installment and then I'll come in the next round. I want to understand, towards the end, the CEO was mentioning, you know, this thing of the admin, expenditure on admin of 10%. But I saw somewhere in his slide he's talking about 12.5%. I want to know where does that come from? Because in our book we are told it's 10%. The second thing that I want to check with the CEO, just say to him, I see that he has been wavering between two terms. On the slides, he speaks of a clean audit. But as he continues talking, he talks about an unqualified. And I want to submit that the two don't always mean the same. Because clean audit for us means an unqualified report that does not have emphasis of matter. But having said that, I want the teacher to tell us, because see, the Auditor General tells us that they are not a going concern and that their liabilities, their debts are more than their assets by 7 million. How does that relate to this understanding of theirs, that they have a clean audit? But also, how did it happen that they should find themselves in this kind of position, particularly where you are telling us, somewhere you're saying that liquidity risk is being monitored closely. That can be the result of people who are monitoring that. Okay, maybe for now, let me just talk about this. I think they have achieved their targets, I think, by and large, which is very encouraging. There's just one that concerns me, the one of the small levy-paying firms, where they achieved only 56%. Because I think the problem in our country, my understanding, is that the small business person is the one who's having it very tough. And the tendency to have a bias in favor of big business. So I just want to understand, what challenges are there? What can they find these small levy paying firms if their target could only be 56%? I'll pause for now, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Diko. Honorable Mushwa.
Thank you,
Chairperson. I also want to thank the group for the report that they gave us. I have two questions. The first one, I'm taking it up from where you left on your unqualified audit for the past 5 years. I think that's encouraging. But if at the end of the day, your placement from, for example, you talk of 1.4, and from that, no, there's a 0%, there was no placement offer for employment, we see that as not very good, because whenever we get people dealing with skills, we believe.
Speak to the mic, Honorable Member.
Thank you. We believe that will improve on job creation or even better job, because if you are skilled, you understand what you are doing there. The second one is your tourism low salary ranges. If I have it correctly, it's not very much encouraging, because tourism is one of the serious attractions of this country. And if the people that are working there, I don't know whether to say underpaid or not say paid well. We are sitting with the challenge. Thank you.
Honorable Mission, Honorable Fanervisiren, and then Honorable Makuelin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a number of questions, and therefore I'll be brief regarding each. The first one is I see, not only with the CETA, but also with the other CETAs, that in the financial year under review, there's been a severe drop in funding from the National Skills Fund. If you could just give us the reasons for that, especially at the time when we were telling people they must up the skilling of people in the poor economic conditions. Then, secondly, I see there's a 20% drop in grants as compared to the previous year, yet the administrative expenses went up. Now, it seems to me as if you're doing less work, your costs should also come down. Then, if you could just shed some light as to the severe overcommitment of the previous year. Was pressure brought on CETA, or is it just poor planning that they've overcommitted themselves financially to such a large extent? Then I see you've got a problem with quorums at your board meetings and also an audit committee meeting, and that has been highlighted as wasteful expenditure to reimburse travel expenses of people. What have you done to encourage people to attend your meetings of the board and your committees? And then lastly, can you just tell us what influenced the uncertainty regarding the future of CETA? The fact that you're only operating under an agreement that will lapse at the end of March next year. What influence has that had on things like staff morale, staff turnover, staff remuneration, strategies to retain staff, etc.? Thank you.
Honorable Van der Westen, Honorable Makubet.
Thanks, sir. I've got three issues to raise. The first relates to the registration or delays in the registrations of new qualifications, in which SAQA as well did say that they are no longer accepting any new submissions. What happened to those qualifications that you were submitting and you wanted to be offered, or whether there was no anticipation that you will be offering with the hope that they will be registered and credited, and whether that did not affect any learners. I think that question, Chairman, is well understood. All I'm saying is usually institutions offer programs even before those are even accredited, with the hope that as they submit, that will have been processed. And I'm saying in this particular case, what was the situation? What has happened? The second, the CEO says there has been very little transformation, if any, at all in this particular sector. And our major concern will be to see that happening. It will not be acceptable for particularly the CETA under this board to accept funds which are redistributed in a manner that does not take into consideration any transformation in that regard. Because you have got this responsibility and you must account for this fund based on the transformation agenda of the country. So to say that there's no movement in this particular regard, I think the CETA should be ashamed of themselves. And they may need to tell us so that we sit here comfortably as to what is actually going to be happening in that regard. The third, which is the last for now, relates to FET in terms of placement, in terms of training. It is said that none was actually achieved or done. What caused that? I think that was mentioned in passing, I couldn't get the exact reasons why it has been like that. Perhaps if that clarification is given, one will be able to make a proper follow-up in that regard. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. CEO and Board Chairperson, there are a couple of issues from where I'm sitting. The forensic audit report. I note some issues there and the findings by the commission or the audit team and the disagreement by the board, specifically on two areas. Which you as a board are disagreeing with the report, the issue of supply chain management and the issue of maladministration. If you can clarify, Board Chairperson, Mr. Mabaso, what led to the disagreement of the board with the funding? Or actually you agreed on one, you disagreed on one, and then you... We're happy to see that the CEO and the CFO were actually exonerated. And then what I would want to know from the board is corrective measures, where you agree with the report. What have you put in place so far as ways of corrective measures? And just share with us, why are you wanting to know the sources of the allegations at the board? Why is it important for you? My understanding is that that's why you have in the public service even the issues of whistleblowers, that they remain anonymous. But I just want to understand, why did you make it a mandate to the forensics that you want to know the sources of that? Wouldn't this be a blockage for people even tomorrow when they want to raise issues with you and alert you on issues as the board? That they would be worried that as soon as you start with your work, you'll start wanting to know who they are, besides following the issue and finding its truth and its correctness. And then coming to the issue of the AG's report, there are a number of areas that the AG is speaking on. You note in page 71 of your annual report, where AG is reporting a number of areas which is concerned about. And just clarity from the city. Issues of, maybe just to start by saying, as the portfolio committee, and this is said to everybody, including the department that got a clean audit without even an emphasis on it. And what Honorable Dugobo has said, I hope you have noted and clarified to us together with the CFO. But what we normally say is that we are not happy about only clean audit. We are looking at performance, we are looking at output, your impact to the society. The fact that you get a clean audit, you spend the finances correctly, and still no transformation in the sector is a matter of worry. But again, the issues that are reflected there, CEO, you did not even touch them. Because we are interested in the accounting of what happened there. There are issues of legalities between yourself and some service provider that you are not accounting for to us, which we want clarity on, if you can highlight. But again, I'm not so sure how does it come that as CETA, for example, the matter that is there to disclose in Note 18.1, CETA is a contingency asset. Of 12 million from NSF due to some deliverables not being met to date by the seat. By the seat. What is happening there? Are we spending what we do not have secondly? And that to me can't really end up being a clean audit. That you spend what you do not have. And you set targets based on what you are supposed to be funded and you eventually don't get funded. Because you do not meet your targets. Just clarify, even the latter paragraph from the Auditor General, where I understand there's some financial statements which the corresponding figures, is an issue between 31 March 2009 being reinstated as a result of errors discovered during 31 March 2009-10. In the financial statement of the bid. If we can get clarity there, why do we have a situation whereby there's some errors of corresponding figures when we are accounting. Because sometimes it's a trigger of something that is happening. How do we have finances that are not corresponding, that are ending up even being picked up? So I'm just raising those matters of emphasis that are raised by the AG, that each and every one of them must be explained to us so that we get a clarity. Even the latter one, financial sustainability, going concern, the accounting authorities report and note 18.2 to the financial statement indicates that Peter and Kat a net loss of 17 million during the year ended. As of date, the entity currently liabilities exceeds its total assets. When you are at the period whereby, you are overcommitted, and I think one of the members raised it, but you are at the point where you are not even yet licensed. There's issues that you will be relicensing the CETA landscape, which in its own is a threat to you, whereby you should be cautious in how you spend your money and manage it properly. You can't have such liabilities going into, you don't even have a five-year mandate, you are ending in March. So I just want to understand what is really happening, because I think a detailed explanation of your finances is required, that you clearly understand what is happening in the CETA. And noting your history, CEO, the CETA has had a high turnover of CEOs since its establishment. I think you are the third or fourth CEO, if I'm not mistaken. So you've had a high turnover of CEOs, and all of them, as they were leaving, there were issues of even financial mismanagement. There were issues of concerns of finances. So that's why I'm saying you need to go into detail and explain to us as the portfolio committee the issues of your management of finances, how you are dealing with them, what is reflected, what is in front of us reflects a crisis. But the second issue that I want to speak on, your performance area is, I'll go to your presentation as a reference. Page 9, page 10, page 11, page 12. The issue of scarce skill that you are not meeting as a target, which is a critical area. It calls for concern. What are the issues there? I think Honorable Dikobo spoke about your SMEs, which as well is a critical area. I think where I'm sitting, you are meeting the easier ones, targets. Where everybody can meet, you are meeting. Because that is not, no CETA is not meeting the targets that you are meeting. You are all meeting them. But the areas where are more important and more critical, you are not meeting. If you are to say the issue of transformation in the industry is still a challenge, but you are not meeting even the targets around your critical areas, critical skills, you are not meeting the targets of your SMME development, it's a bit of concern. But again, something that we normally emphasize as the portfolio committee is the issue of your accessibility. Stakeholders. Your CETA is based in Gauteng in Rivonia. One, let alone a person who's in Gauteng, Orange Farm, can access you in Rivonia. What more about a person who's sitting in Kikuku, in Limpopo? Mpumalanga is known as one of the areas that tourism is quite an issue. It grows, it's a panel of tourism. There are no regional offices. How are you accessible through to people? And I must say, your website is one of the most difficult websites to search through. You battle to get information through your website. Let alone your offices being inaccessible. I'm just making sure I've got an access to internet. I go to website to battle to get documents. So I just want you to respond to some of the issues that we have raised as the portfolio committee. And I'll start with the chair of the board. This is currently dealing with the issues that we raised towards the board and the governance issues, but it's concerning, honestly. Board Chairperson, just share with us, why are the boards not meeting? We are worried about the governance. I mean, the oversight that you are supposed to play. If the board can correct, the audit committee does not correct, and we find certain problems in finances. Just share with us, what are the issues there?
Thanks, Chair. It is quite a number of questions. I'll pick on some of principle, and then the CEO will come in and then talk to the operational issues. Maybe just the last comment being the website not being friendly, I think we can take note of that and commit to have a look at it and look at ways of improving that particular one. And closely linked to that is the question of accessibility. It's not the first time that the issue of accessibility has been brought forth. But it so happens that at the time when we're really reviewing this particular issue, we are also faced with the question of uncertainty around the question of landscaping, which is obviously, in just looking at what has been proposed, might have wide-ranging implications on us as a CIFA. So our planning had to be held back a bit. We had taken a resolution earlier to actually even establish satellite branches in most of the areas that you mentioned that are called deep rural areas. That obviously has financial implications on its own, and when we do take that particular decision, we need to look to take rather a long-term view. So as soon as there is more clarity on the question of our life cycle, I think we'll be able to put that issue to bed. But we do take note of that, and we are equally alive to that particular concern. Maybe comments on the question of a clean audit. Maybe some comments will change our understanding of some of the comments around what is considered as unqualified, as clean. But when we look at the question of unqualified, in our opinion, it obviously one points to the fact that our administrative regime is sound. I think that is what it actually means, that when things are looked in the context of PFMA, when things are looked in the context of GRAP, that we do comply with sound administrative and accounting principles and processes. Whereas the emphasis of META, I would think obviously the AG has got the mandate of pointing us in a direction and say certain issues need to be looked at. And again, when we look at context of the issues that are raised in the emphasis of META, take one, the issue of legalities. The CEO will touch in a bit of detail, but what he's pointing at is that it's not concluded. It's not necessarily an issue that points to a crisis, but it says there's potentially exposure. We don't know how much. We've laid a claim, a legal claim against the service provider, and there's a counterclaim, which is of a lesser amount from that, but we don't know how the matter is going to be concluded when it goes to court. It's been hanging for about 2 years. The issue of a going concern, when it's looked at, I think there were two main issues that were raised that the AG is referring to. I think the one also alludes to the question of the landscaping, which is obviously beyond our control. And secondly is the issue that has been touched on in various contexts in the questioning, that question of overcommitment. Maybe I should just touch upon that particular issue. One of the questions directed to it was it purely a lack of planning from our side, or was there pressure that was born to bear to the CETA by industry? I think the latter sounds to be more true in saying, you know, the learnerships have been very popular in our industry and are greatly appreciated by industry at large. We were obviously overwhelmed by the response when we were called for expression of interest on learnership in that particular year. It's obviously not wise to overcommit yourself. I'm not trying to justify that particular issue. But I can say, though, that in hindsight, I think that has done us a lot of good. We were on the eve of hosting the biggest world event, and our industry was obviously at the center of that. And that has actually possibly contributed very positively in the service level that we managed, which, looking at the reports, one of the big things that are coming out from, I'm not going to quote issues that are outside of our scope, but service was quoted you know, by visitors to this country, which is, you know, you're talking hotels, you're talking restaurants. And I think there was quite a lot of you know, impact that was caused by that bit of overcommitment from our side. But we learned from it in terms of planning. You know, there was action that was taken because we were saying this cannot be done. Disciplinary action was taken, and two senior members of staff, actually, we had to let go of because of that particular issue. But I'm saying there's also pros to the error that occurred at that stage. And some of the legacies, obviously, of that particular error was that the overcommitment meant that the following year as well, you know, our resources were a bit limited because of what had happened, because of the numbers that we had taken on, which also talks to the issue of the going concern. But again, I think the positive thing is, I don't know if the CEO did mention in his report, looking at the financials that are going to be coming for this particular year, which we're going to be discussing next year, is that we are done now with that overcommitment. We are back on a clean slate again in terms of our finances. So the question of liabilities, exceeding assets, as well as an issue, the AG had to refer to it because we were talking at different periods under review. But when it comes to this year, those particular issues have systematically been worked on. Because the board said after this whole issue happened, and there was clear planning around it, and saying, good people, we possibly have a crisis in our hands, we've spent more than what we currently have, what are we going to do? And on the one hand, we found and we took the disciplinary action, on the other, and we said, what are the positives that we can get from it, and how best do we manage it going forward? There's also an issue around the salary ranges in the industry. it is indeed undisputable fact that the industry possibly, as well as, you know, when you talk in relative terms, what it costs for a typical student to go through, say, a technicon university qualification and coming out and possibly getting into entry-level position doesn't really talk to each other in terms of salaries. You spend a fortune. Technicons, as an example, I mean, tourism studies are possibly one of the most expensive. And when you come out of there, you possibly, you know, it doesn't really match the expectations as well of people that are employed in the industry. But the impact that it obviously have on us as a CETA is the base, is the revenue base that, you know, we're drawing from really a low revenue base. I'm not very certain if the CETA has got a lot of power in changing that particular aspect. The private sector issue, employers engage on individual basis, the salaries that they pay, and there's pretty much very little that we can do. We just have to work with what we have. The question of quorums in board meetings, it was also an issue that was central when we met earlier this year for our strategy session. We said we looked at this particular issue and we said it's not acceptable. I'm going to start by putting forth some of the reasons that come through and then talk corrective action. One of the things, again, without, you know, overemphasizing the whole question of the World Cup, is that it is fact, though, that we all are in the industry that was possibly the most active. So it did happen. There was a lot of events. There were a lot of activities, a lot of interventions that were required. And looking at the, you know, the caliber of people that we have and what they actually are employed to do, it did have a lot of impact, that a person would have committed to coming through to meetings, and all of a sudden there's something that was coming through, which was agent and link, because this was taken as an issue of national importance, the whole question of World Cup. But then, as I said, we also not accepting this. We've looked at even policy around this particular issue in trying to address it. There are two things that we have done which I think are going to help us quite a lot going forward. One was the appointment of a board secretary, which we never had in the past. This is an appointment that took effect early on this year. So our coordination is far much smoother because as much as I say that it's because of commitments from people, it could have been in some of the instances the question of coordination of meetings as well could have been a challenge. So that one particular issue I'm thinking we've dealt with. Other than the coordination, there's obviously a lot of, in terms of context, on the input that we get now from having a board secretariat around efficiency of the functioning of the board and its substructures. We have also said, you know, in looking at this particular issue again, that meetings that don't correlate in future are going to continue, be it that they will not be able to take binding resolutions, but they are going to be there, and they are going to make resolutions for the boards that is going to precede them to then ratify those particular decisions. So it's not really going to be wasteful expenditure going forward. There was a question on the uncertainty or the influence of the uncertainty on landscaping. I touched a bit upon it, and one of the issues on the question was one of the biggest ones that I take is the issue of staff morale. On staff morale, it's been one of the most tricky ones. And we sat in our planning, we looked at it and saying, you know, this is one particular aspect that we have to manage very closely. I think that, you know, that the worst thing that you can possibly do as leadership around times of uncertainty is not talking to staff. And I think that part we've done pretty well, you know, in meeting with staff and sitting with them all the times. And they, you know, that they are very much aware of what the progress is. Although we cannot give, you know, 100% commitment on various things, but the commitment we give to people is that, you know, if our license is extended, our good people are still needed, and we need them. And we try and encourage people to, you know, to stay with us and look at where the organization is going rather than jumping ship at this early stage. So that's one. But in terms of the functioning of the board, on the uncertainty, it obviously might contradict my earlier statement on the satellite branches across the country that we had to hold. But as a principle, we said, as the board and said, we're going to run, we have a compact for 2010. And one of the things in the compact is that our decisions, we're going to try as much as possible that they are not impacted by the question of uncertainty, that we're going to operate as if, you know, there's nothing that's going to be changing the next day. So that's pretty much the view we've taken to try and, you know, and not hinder ourselves in our operation. The question of forensic audit. obviously, the forensic issue is now, I think this was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I would think. One of the questions that was raised by the chair is firstly, why the need to identify the source. This particular issue does not necessarily come out of malice or trying to know to track that person and say why is the particular issue done. But let me just say, firstly, that data also have a line that is managed by an external partner, where people can call in and, you know, they will just give us reports on what has been found. We don't get involved in that particular one. With this particular one of the things, and it came through as well in the investigation, that it would have been a lot more beneficial for the investigators should they have known where it came from, because some of the questions they could have asked directly. You know, it hindered on some of the things where it became a very wide-ranging exercise, but the scope then was open to the investigators. Talk to everybody and anybody that you think is going to assist in this particular process. And they actually did that. So, you know, the intent was not necessarily, you know, it's regrettable if it comes across as maybe trying to discourage people in the future from coming forth. But, you know, we've had quite a few of the properly registered concerns that have been raised through the external party, and it comes through to our audit committee and the report to the board that there was this particular issue. And here are our findings. We find somebody that maybe action should be taken, or this was registered, but nothing could be established.
How did this one then come through?
It was just a letter, a handwritten letter that just was sent through fax, I think. It was fax. It just came through the fax. You know. So there is also a question of trying to think. And saying, is this a serious allegation? I think that's one thing that you are confronted with when you see it, and saying, should I act on this? Or should I just take it as somebody who's you know. But as a board, we said, you know, we can't, because they are serious, the allegations. Although we don't know if serious, not serious, let's proceed anyway. Let's, you know, let's have investigators to determine for us if there's anything that comes out of it. And where the issues came out and were reported to us, there were some areas of administrative lapses that were identified by the investigators. In those administrative lapses, there was no finding of ill intent, which could have led to say possibly criminal, you know, procedures and the likes. On the administrative ones, the action was taken in that because the key people around issues of our administrative processes is the CEO and the CFO, and they were called upon to explain all this to us. That's why in the end they ended with warnings, the two of them. But in some of the areas, things should have been done better. We then, with the education we got from the exercise, reviewed a whole host of policies. One of those was the supply chain, which we overhauled in its entirety. We've got a completely new supply chain policy in place and processes that we've implemented as a result of that. So to do away with any of the concerns that might be coming through and perceptions that might be created, maybe by some of the administrative irregularities that have possibly existed in the past. I hope I've dealt quite a bit with the issues of principle, and I'll allow the CEO to take issues back.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks, Mr. Mabaso, for the response you have given. Right. And I will deal with some of the issues, and I also have my colleagues here who are ready and keen to be able to put clear perspective on some of the issues. And, right. First and foremost, there was a question from the Honourable Member in terms of the admin. There's 12.5% on presentation, and the well-known one is 10%. I think 12.5% and 10% is one and the same thing in the following sense. It is 10% of 100. Right, and that is 10% of what has been collected by this, by the sector. I mean by TITA through the department. Right. It is 12.5% of 80%. Right. And what do we receive?
Yeah. I'm always confused. I always ask the CEO to explain.
What happened is that the department has contracted SARS to collect the levy. They collect 10 rand or 1 rand from an employer around the corner. And they then retain 2% collection rate. So they pass a 98% to the Department of Higher Education. The Department of Higher Education through NSF retain 18%. So they pass to us 80% of the levy. So now we then say, well, what is 80%? We then said, okay, well, 12.5% will be the same, of 80% will be the same as 10% of 100.
No, Chairperson, look, we can calculate. Be rest assured. We're talking about, when we say 10%, we are not talking about money that didn't come to them. The money that they receive, they must only spend 10% of that. In fact, 10% is the maximum. We are not talking about the money that have gone to NSF or wherever. The money that landed into their coffers, they must spend 10% of that, not 12.5%.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we will continue, Madam Chair. For us, look, it's immaterial, and we can remove the 12.5% and remain with 10%. And we're saying, look, in terms of the skills levy, the Act is very specific, right, that you should not spend more than 10% of what has been collected. Yeah? Right. So then the next issue that has been raised by the honourable member there was the clean audit, and of course, the clean audit, in our understanding, right, of course, is when you did not receive a qualification, right, and accepting the fact that, look, there are those few emphases of matter. There are those that are not in our control. There are those that are in our control. I mean, the relicensing is not in our control at all, ne? Right? So, however, the AG would always bring it up, ne? Right? And I suppose it's not only us; it's all the sitters that got that particular emphasis of matter. Ne? Right? Of course, Mr. Mabaso has explained the issue of the going concern, right? In this regard, and one particular issue that he did not mention is the fact of the matter that, look, insofar as the NSF is concerned, we were to get money from NSF, right? Unfortunately, or as at the time of the closing of the books, we have not received that money, right? Purely because NSF was of the opinion that, look, we have not submitted their report. Upon receipt of the report, they were then to release the money, right? And we then had that assurances from NSF, yes, when you receive the report, because it was purely on the issue of the performance, né? Right, on that, and that has been since sorted out, right? So we will be getting the money, right? However, despite receiving that money, right?
But you had submitted in time the report to NSF?
As of the date of the 31st of March, the report had not been submitted.
Okay.
Right. Right. The reason being that there has been a number of issues, learners that have gone through the system, right, that have not been able to be declared competent, and as a result, we would not be prudent to submit a report that is complete to NSF. Right.
Before you proceed, I'm just trying to understand why are we not setting targets and time of achievement based on the time frames that we have? Why would we have the reporting of the learners falling outside your accounting period?
Yes. It does happen. In this kind of an environment, né, right, we're dependent on learners being declared competent. And if learners are not ready, right, to be able to be assessed, then, right, you know way that you will force the situation. Hence, in terms of our rules and policy, we allow the declaration of competence to go beyond 12 months. It would go not exceeding 18 months to be able to allow learners to be ready to be able to, right, because it's not like in the exam situation where we say, look, you must be ready for the exam. Here is the assessment is done. Are the learners ready? Are they able to achieve on that? So it is on that particular issue, né? Right? Okay, and I'm sure the next honourable member asked questions on placement, right? And I'm sure Muzi will deal with those issues relating to placement. But I think it's important to indicate that Mr. Mabaso did touch the issue of the low salaries and in the sector, as well as we are having a very peculiar situation here. We are having close to 40,000 employers in the sector, according to the research, and 20,000 are the ones that are registered with South African receipt of revenue. Right. And however, most of those companies are actually SMEs in their own right. And you have seen that, look, they actually have employees that are less than 50%, almost 20,000 of them. So these SMEs, who are these in the tourism sector? And if you go and look at them, you'll find that, look, they are restaurants, they are small SMEs, and as a result, you probably know that, look, in the restaurant industry, right, staff that are working there are actually paid on tips that clients are actually coming up there. So as a result, you will not find them to, they won't find their way through to the payroll where they would pay the 1% levy. And I'm also accepting the fact that, look, the Skills Development Act made provision for exclusions. You have SMEs that are exempted from paying the levy, those whose payroll is less than $500,000 per annum. So we have a lot of those SMEs that are actually being excluded from the base. So as a result, we are only, and it's also one of those shocking things that we need to say that, look, trends in that particular sector, those particular companies. There's a huge outsourcing, right? The housekeeping, you will find that, look, they are not employed by those hotels, are now employed by contract cleaning. You would also have security, which is now run separately. So as a result, you have a hotel which is actually, there are very few staff members, management that actually part of that, and the levy will then come from there, from those particular individuals. So as a result, we are saying our levy base, it is indeed very, very, very low. But added to that, the sector is actually, it's not a sector where there is a collective bargaining. There are no strong trade unions that are negotiating wages, right, with employers to improve them to be equivalent to any other, like you take auto or you take other sectors. So as a result, you find a situation that, look, wages are not improving significantly, where when you apply the 1%, you will then be able to get more money to that. And that is the sad situation. And without having to foul Carl here, that, look, also our line department are actually not coming to the party. We have raised this thing with the Department of Labor, now with the Department of Education, to say our line department, Department of Tourism, Department of Sports, need to be able to budget a particular administration levies for us. We have about 27 of the provincials who are not actually coming to the party. But I'm very confident with the current department. They have called for information, and we have submitted this information. There have been a series of meetings with the DG, right, with various government departments to be able to show them that significance of them being part of the skills arena in terms of paying the levies to those. The honourable member from raised an issue here regarding the NSF. That, look, there is a drop of the NSF. But I think it is important to indicate that, look, and I hope that going forward we will have a better arrangement, because now the arrangement with the entire Department of Education, insofar as NSF, is that, look, there will be clear arrangement. Unlike in the past, where you would wait for NSF to come up with an expression and you apply for whatever window they have, and it will take time for them to be able to consider that. And as a result, any delay in receiving the funds or have approval of the project by NSF will impact on our performance, right? And it will also impact in terms of any income that we were to get from NSF. So,
and on that one, Mr. Hood, have we sorted the matter, the NSF funding to CITES and the time frame? Are we dealing with that? I mean, the concern that Mr. Sudis is raising obviously impacts on their performance as CITES, which is how NSF functions.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I can mention that the National Skills Fund, they are busy dealing with this issue at a high level. I mean, they are having discussions with the Acting Director General, the Deputy Director General, and the Manager of the Skills Fund. And they are also consulting with the relevant stakeholders. But I can assure you, Honourable Chair, currently they are dealing with it. And I think soon they will communicate to the CITES and the stakeholders.
I think I just wanted to be sure so that we don't have a situation whereby CITES are sitting having to account on even the not conducive processes by NSF. So you're assuring us that matter is receiving the attention it deserves. We'll follow it through with the department at some point just to check where it is. Thanks for that. You wanted to say something?
Honourable Chair, the concern of the Portfolio Committee is also noted, and I'm going to convey it to the manager of the National Skills Fund tomorrow morning. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And for the sorry about that, CEO. I thought I might forget just to get
okay.
It.
Thanks. The other aspect that was raised by the Honourable Member was there is a 20% drop on the mandatory grant, but on the administration, the administration cost has actually gone up. Let me indicate that the two issues are not dependent on each other. The mandatory grant, as it stands, is companies that have paid the levy are entitled to the mandatory grant, and at the time of the filing season, which is the end of June every year, they would apply that they should receive their mandatory grant. And as well as through our efforts, we encourage everybody to come to the party. Yes, if we are having less application on the mandatory grant, right, the payout is going to be less. So in this particular case, I can indicate that, look, yes, there was a drop, but the drop was very insignificant. And I'm sure Muzil could deal with that issue of the mandatory grant. Right. On the administration, of course, administration costs remain an issue. There has been inflationary increases, there has been salary increases, right? And there will always an increase. And I can show, assure the member here that, look, we have made sure that, look, we remain within the 10% administration that limit has been set out. Ms. Mabaso has dealt with the other question of the severe overcommitment, right, insofar as the learnership in the year 2008 and 2009, right, and which, right, was a critical period in making sure that, look, we have the necessary skilled workforce for the World Cup, because we realize that, look, if we're not having significant learners then, right, the likelihood of us being able to host the World Cup, right, was going to be impacted. Right. Of course, it was not something that was done deliberately. We realized that, look, there's been such a lot of applications, and the managers that were concerned then, but made that an oversight in terms of having to overcommit the organization, right, in terms of taking more than what the finances of the organization would have. The issue of the quorum has been dealt by Mr. Mabaso. I must say that with regard to the issue that has been raised of the future of the organization, right, in terms of the extent to which the non-relicensing or the manner in which it is being set out now, what impact it had on the staff morale, right? He has indicated that, and of course, I have made it my duty that on a regular basis, I actually inform the staff to the development, right, and assure them that, look, this organization, it is here to stay, right, and we have not received anything to the contrary, right. Of course, the impact is getting good people to be able to join the organization. As of now, they are not so much keen because they don't know what is the future of the organization, right. So we simply indicate to them that, look, we will have to wait until we get this thing so that we can then be able to get onto the recruitment campaign. Right. But with the current staff, of course, we have lost significant staff members, right, and however, the ones that are still here, it is as a result of through persuasions that, look, they remain, that there's still future in this organization. With regard to the issue that has been raised by Ms. Makubela here, I think, regarding the registration of the new qualification, I have no doubt that Mr. Ibrahim Bumgard will deal with that issues, right, after I've just made. Right. Mr. Mabaso has dealt with the issue of the forensic audit and the supply chain. Right. Then the issue of the legalities, I think this arises from the AG's report where there's an issue relating to the legalities. Yes, it's true that, look, it is as a result of the legal action that we have taken against a particular supplier. Right, and in this particular case, I think the issue here related to what we have given to the AG and what the what our attorneys have given to the AG in terms of what is the risk, not talking to Aja, to each other. We have since sorted out by actually going back to the lawyers and say, look, what is the exposure in the true sense, right, so that in future this thing must not happen. Madam Chair, you have raised an issue relating to that this organization has a history, and the history of the many CEOs that has been here. Right. It is our view that, look, the turnaround or the turnover of the CEOs here was in the period of the year 2000 up to the year 2003. Right. So I've been in place since July 2003 up until now. Right. Of course, that remains a fact. There has been so many people. However, there has been a stability since I have been there without having to blow my own horn on that issue. Right. But the fact of the matter is I take seriously the issue of making sure that, look, the organization moves with the speed in terms of delivery, the organization meets its targets, the organization does comply with the legislative requirements that are very huge there. Right. On the other issues, Madam Chair, for completeness, I am going to request Muzi Mwandla, who is the Skills Development Manager, and Ibrahim, who is the ETK Manager, to deal with the other issues that have been raised by the board members, and our accountant here, if at all there are issues that are financially related, she will be able to come up through. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Madam Chair, members of the House, the question relating to the registration of qualifications I'd like to deal with. The SACWA process requires that after 3 years qualifications are reviewed and re-registered. CETA went on an extensive review of qualifications from 2005. The process took us probably a year and a half to get through. The result was that we had submitted a number of qualifications for registration to SACWA. Some of those were sent back to us. We were asked to make corrections, which was done. Unfortunately, some of the corrections, by the time we had submitted it, came at the time when the QCTO had already been established. The processes was that SACWA can no longer register qualifications or work with qualifications that do not fall into the QCTO way of doing things. And as a result, some of the qualifications that we had developed, new ones, we weren't able to register. What did happen, though, was that the qualifications that were on our scope were re-registered. So for training providers, there wasn't any gap in terms of the offerings. The member mentioned that in some instances, providers offer qualifications before they've got approval for it. With CETA, we discourage that completely. There are sometimes people who are running a business and apply as though they're a new training provider applying for that, but when we do find that, we advise them that there would be no certifications for learners that came prior to the processes having been followed correctly. Also, we would, when we go on site for verification visits, ensure that whatever we've approved for them is actually there at the end of the day. So in terms of the question that the member raised, yes, we do still face a challenge. And in fact, just yesterday there was a meeting in Midrand where the handover was done from SACWA to the QCTO. Some of the processes have been explained clearly now. I think it's going to be easier for us to go forward. So one of the things that CETA will be doing as soon as we know whether we have a license is those qualifications that we weren't able to register will become stuff that we want to register under the QCTO, meaning that it will be new stuff and it will be done in a new way, and our providers will obviously have access to doing things as it's supposed to be done going forward. Just on a lighter note, Chairperson, into the House, maybe our CEO has bought one of those bands. I don't know if you know the new craze that everybody uses, those wristbands. For balance and stability, is there one for the last couple of years?
Well, that's why you still see what is still within the future. Okay, any other responses? Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll just respond to two questions. The first one, or maybe before I go to the two questions, in general, the issue is on performance, and definitely our performance or service delivery is largely determined by the budget. In this case, we've got
what we call discretionary grant, which is or discretionary levies that we have to disperse as discretionary grant to the tune of 20%, and that will be in the region of just about 60 million on annual basis. And to put something like 1,000 or 2,000, let me say 2,000 learners on a learnership for 1 year, it cost about that 60 million. In other words, delivery on that part is becoming largely expensive. Now, let me speak to the small levy payers as a question that was posed. It does relate to what you call mandatory grants. We've got one target, which is subdivided into three groups. The first one is for the CETA to support large companies, large in terms of the number of employers or employees that are employed in that organization. And the second part of it is the CETA to support medium firms, medium in the sense that they employ less than 150 employees and above 50 employees. And then we've got the small levy payers, which are companies that employ people less than 40, I mean, say, 50 employees. Now, the thing is, with those companies, they are quite a number within our sector. And if you look at your restaurants, your travel agencies, your football clubs, they all have that range of, so they fall within the small levy payers. Now, when it comes to the wage bill in terms of their skills levy contribution, what happens is that they'll just qualify to pay levies. In that sense, what they contribute is very minimal. In a way that, let me say, for example, they contribute a total of 1,000 rand per year. And now the cost of claiming that, and so that they get to be supported, are usually higher than what they've already paid. So they end up not coming back to claim their money. And this is the big number of small levy payers that end up not being supported. I think our target there on annual basis will be about over 1,000, and only about half of those will come back and claim their money. I must say that we have noted that in such a way that in our current financial year, we have made a plan to ensure that we provide support in form of skills development facilitators to go and make it easier for the small levy paying companies to be supported. The next question relates on placement. Well, indeed, placement is our ultimate target, that after we've trained, we all wish that those learners get self-employed or get employment and start making a living on their own. It is also a challenge. The placement or the target that we're referring to there when it comes to that scarce skill actually depends on the availability of employment in the sector. Towards the 2010 Soccer World Cup, the demand was there. It was actually great, especially 2 years, a year prior to that. And we did manage, but not without any resistance from the sector, in the sense that when we introduced what we call graduate development program, the sector did not want to place graduates within their employ. We had to put an incentive scheme to incentivize employers to take these unemployed graduates so that they can get some work experience and be employable at the end of the day. Well, apparently the demand then went up and quite a number of graduates were placed in such a way that it exhausted our financial resources. As I've already indicated, that delivery in this case requires huge investment. As a result, in the past financial year, we didn't have enough funds to ensure that there was this kind of placement. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I don't know if you want to say something. I wanted to respond to the prior period error. It was resulted because of the rent that was accounted on the previous period, which is 2008 and 2009. Yeah, it was resulted from the rental that was accounted in the previous period. That expense was supposed to be the 2010 and 2009 expense, but it was an expense in 2009 and 2008. We're supposed to classify it as prepaid expense in the balance sheet the previous year, but that was the error. But it was accounted for, but in the wrong period. And also the income that for SMEs that was accounted for was overstated the previous year. So what the Auditor General do, they weigh the matter. It was recorded in our books, but the other one in the wrong period. The other one was from the reliable information, but it was overstated. Maybe it was because of the miscalculation and that. And they weigh the matter. If they find the matter is immaterial, the actual doesn't affect the qualification on the financial statement. So that is the reason.
I'm going to take just two follow-up quickly, members, so that we can move to the next presentation. Honorable Dikobo? Okay. One is fine. Honorable Makwesi, want you close in one each issue. Honorable Mashwana, you'll be the last one. Just quickly, members, let's not take much time so that we have enough time to do the next presentation.
No, I wanted you to assist us, Chairperson, because see, the Auditor General spoke to us and explained all these steps. So I want maybe the CFO now to tell us, do they agree with us, they don't have a clean audit, but an unqualified, not clean, just that part. But the other thing relates to, you see, here is a disjunction. You train 1,400 people. None of them are placed. Of course, maybe you have no control over people who employ. But then one would have expected that the CETA would then focus on new venture creations. Because what we have seen with others, they will do this non-venture creations, they will assist these people to establish themselves, they will incubate them for some time. And then when they are on solid ground, they let them go. And yet I see on page 12, your target on new venture creations is 11318 of the presentation. Their target is 113, and their achievement is zero. I don't understand the thinking now. If we have a challenge that we train people that are not being placed, and we see here they're talking about self-employment, but I don't see an effort by the CETA to push for new venture creations, because at least those people will be able to be self-employed.
Sir, I still haven't got a proper answer on transformation aspects. Whether it's being silently agreed upon or what, I don't know. Or it may be that it was mentioned, but it's not clear on what is the actual vision of the CETA around those issues, because transformation can be very broad, and I do not want to attempt to venture into particular areas. before they themselves accept or actually tell on which areas where these transformatory issues going to be, or what becomes the challenges in them handling that particular purpose is the key to whatever we want to be doing. So we can't have a sector which goes on and on, business as usual, you know, but accepting that there's a challenge, but not telling how they will go about the challenge. It's a meaning that 2010-11 financial year, we're likely to be in the same situation, because we're not being told whether there's any attempt or efforts to address that particular part.
Thanks.
Thanks,
Honorable
Mukubela.
Honorable
Mushan.
Thank you,
Mr.
But I'm looking at page 12 of, I don't know if the colored one of the presentation, and I note that you have got your 76% unemployed and the 24% only employed. I'm checking if there's a turnaround strategy, because you see this percentage should be the other way around. There are a lot of them that are unemployed and very few employed. Do you have a plan that for sure will change this? Thank you. I got it and left it in my head. Okay, thank you, but can you follow me? You can. Oh. I started by saying, am I not jumping the gun? If I did, can we stop it at that? Yeah.
I think maybe I'll make my concluding remarks later. Let me just allow the response and take it forward.
Thanks once more, Madam Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members. Right. We note with appreciation that, look, the committee, when it comes to the audit report, clean is clean. Right, and we will ensure that, look, we do not use the terminology for the sake of using it, right, given that, look, there appears to be an understanding, and we appreciate it very much. So clean for us, going forward, it will be an audit report that has no emphasis of letter and anything that has to do with management letter as well. Right. Indeed, the issue here, right, the member has indicated, and I'm sure Muzi will deal with it, the when it comes to the number of learners, right, and there has not been placement. Of course, we colleagues, with all good intentions, when we contract the employers who takes on learnership, we also contract them with a particular percentage in terms of placement, right. And that is why you'll see that, look, number of our employers are not taking huge number of learners, because they realize that, look, post the learnership or the program, they will then be forced to be able to take those learners, and it may handicap on them. And so they are becoming very cautious in terms of the number of learners that they can take. When it comes to new venture creation, right, Muzi will deal with it, right, this is young people that are keen to be able to be trained on how to run their businesses, right? I must say that, look, given that in the previous year we took a huge number of learnership, for the year under review, we chose not to take on new venture creation because our resources were overly committed, and it is on that basis that, look, We had that particular target, and when it comes to enrollment, we did not do that. But this current financial year, we are going to have new venture creation. The issue relating to transformation that has been raised here, and I'm sure Mr. Mabaso will deal with that. However, the important aspect is that, look, the issue of transformation, it's a common factor, or is common knowledge, that the sector is least transformed. Right? It has been said by a number of platforms by the Honorable Minister Martinez van Schalkwyk regarding this. And we're probably aware that, look, the Department of Tourism had to come up with a BE scorecard that is speaking to or not speaking to the DTI and all those things. It would be interesting to check, and probably it will confirm what we have said, that, look, the extent to which since the promulgation of the BE scorecard, how many companies have actually gone and got transformed accordingly. As TITA is a concern, to that extent, we then had to have a particular project that will deal with the BE. Right? So we are supporting the council that has been set up by the Department of Tourism, right? And we call it Tourism Council of BE, the TEXA, right? Which will then be able to identify those companies that we can be able to go and do an impact in terms of compliance in so far as the BE concern is. Right. And I'm sure the rest, Muzi, can deal with those issues very quickly without having to delay the committee's business. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, someone.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, the first one on transformation, well, indeed, we, in this current financial year, have a plan to deal with equity. If I may indicate, as much as transformation is part of our mandate as the CETA, but our mandate is limited to skills development. In other words, we train along equity. That will be around the female and the disability as well as black people. So in terms of the national skills development strategy, there are targets like we must make sure that we train 84% or 84 people trained must be black and I think I'm just putting those other way around, 54% women and at least 4% must be people with disabilities. Madam Chair, that is as far as our contribution can be done when it comes to transformation. Otherwise, the issues of ownership of those enterprises are totally beyond our scope or mandate. And then may I also speak to the learnership report that the Honourable Member has asked about here. This learnership report indicates the status of learners that were on the learnership program in 2009-10. It indicates that about 24% of the total number of learners were employed learners. In other words, we find them there in the workplace. These are workers. All we do, we fund their training. And the second part is that an expenditure of about 76% plus that same enrollment was to cover the cost of unemployed learners. In other words, these will be learners who will be unemployed before the start of the learnership program. And then the learnership program will then help them to be employed. So that, in other words, we spend more money on taking unemployed learners and putting them through a learnership qualification so that they get employment for at least a period of 1 year. And if I did not answer that question to the satisfaction of the Honourable Minister, she would make a follow-up. Madam Chair, the next part is on the new venture creation. It is, of course, not an oversight on our side or the fact that we were not thinking straight in terms of ensuring that the learners who could not be placed must then be given opportunity to study on how to create their own business. But as we indicated earlier, it has been the financial constraints from our side as of that financial year. But as of this financial year, we have made a provision to make sure that a number of learners are then put into the new venture creation programs to ensure that in case they don't get formal employment, they can employ themselves through starting their own businesses. And I'm also glad to mention that one of such programs is actually being started here in the Western Cape, where we have a partnership with the Department of Economic Development and Tourism to ensure that the local FET college, I think it's the College of Cape Town, take responsibility to train those learners and ensure that there is self-employment opportunities created. And lastly, the entire performance report in terms of deliverables for the financial year 2009-10 should be noted in the backdrop of background that it followed the year on which we overspent or over-allocated on learnership. So we started on a negative note already. As a result, that impacted negatively on the performance of that financial year 2009-10. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Just to say, firstly, CEO, the definition on the qualified clean audit and all that, it's not our definition. It's the AG's definition. So, hence, Member Dikobo was raising it. But this is what we understand when the AG says it's a clean audit. He says to us, because we have regular interaction with the AG's office to understand and give us guidance in some of this and some of the reports that he writes on behalf of the institution. So it's the AG's office. Just a quick one. Your customer service on when I go, I just want to wrap up. Your customer service on page 44, is it still your SO host or you've dumped the SO host and now you are on a new customer service? Because I remember you had SO host as customer service driving project, under your project.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And we're having both. Right, we have not dumped as a host at all, but it's still our program. Right, we're still assisting those particular leaders in that particular one. And what we have done is that we have developed a unit standard-based customer care, right, and we launched it in Devon on the 9th of May, right, and we are currently training people how to use that customer care program. It's unit standard-based. People are going to be declared competent, right, and we will be in a position to report right, in our performance right, in terms of the warm bodies. Unlike SA host, how we report on SA host now, we're reporting on the companies which we are assisting them. Thanks.
No, thanks. I think we need to appreciate the interaction, and there's clearly more need time to engage. I noted that you had submitted your threat plans. We are not dealing with threat plans now. We would obviously indicate to you when we're dealing with threat plans so that you can come through and engage with us on the threat plans. But something that I would want the sitter to respond on through writing as a form of a report. Your transformational issues reflect on the service providers that you have. as a sitter in the sector, would like to get a clear indication that these are the stakeholders, your service providers that exist in the sector in terms of their categories, where they fall. Secondly, it's your SMMEs that exist, their categories. So we're trying to understand where you're spending your money. Understand the issue that you raised on your big businesses support and all that. If you can give us, as a form of a report, that we get it clearly understand, so that when we engage at other levels in terms of issues of transformation, whether with the tourism department or requesting the minister, we have to have a clear indication of what are the issues there, where you are standing. So we would have to look at your SMEs, categories, where they are, your issues of your providers, people who are benefiting your sectors. Just give us that report clearly on where they are standing and which category. Would appreciate that you can send it through our secretary, Annele here, so that we have a clear understanding of what is happening. But as I conclude, just to appreciate the presentation and your presence here, obviously there is a need, as I said, of us further engaging. We note as a portfolio committee that we are engaging with you almost for the first time, and there is a need for us to more dwell into the issues as well as going into the third plan. But I think, Mr. Woon, going towards the issue of the landscape, I think, and look to, I'm just looking at both of you from the department, there is a need for the department or the minister to engage the portfolio committee. I think we'll have to do a request and invite Annele through to the minister to engage the portfolio committee before he concludes the landscape, based on the experiences and the interactions we've had with all the sitters, because we are almost going to conclude the sitters' annual report. And there are a number of areas that I think we should be able to emphasize and deal with when we interact with the minister. I mean, there are a number of issues that members have raised, and opinion that is held by the portfolio committee needs to be communicated to the minister. So I'm hoping that PLO and Mr. Hunt, you are noting that we would want to have that session with the minister just to deal with issues of this area. I know that we would have another one on the NSFAS and FET. We'll link back somehow the work that the CITAS does and the FETs. Would still also need us to engage with the minister on it. So I'm just hoping that we find space to raise some of these things and find meaning, because there are areas where you find that the bottlenecks are not with the sitters but with the departmental process, so that when we engage, we are able to unlock some of those things that need to be unlocked and make sure that there's processes and efficiency within what is expected to do. On those few words, I'd like to say thank you, Chairperson Mabasa and CEO and the team for being with us. You are free to be excused if you want to leave, if you want to sit through. Let's ensure that the presentation wouldn't deny you the opportunity. But we'd like to call the next speaker to come forward and present. Members, you have 2 minutes just to strike your legs.
Oh, Thank you.